Hi, welcome to BCI Cattle Chat. I'm Brad White, joined today by Dr. Bob Larson, Dr. Philip Lancaster, and we have a guest today, Dr. Sarah Lancaster. Welcome, everyone.
Hey, good morning, Brad.
Good morning, Brad.
Good morning.
We're happy to have you with us, and we've got Dr. Lancaster. Dr. Sarah has a podcast called The War Against Weeds, and so she's going to talk today some about an important topic, weed management in pastures, as well as grazing management. And then we're going to talk a little bit about how you manage some of the native pastures versus some of the introduced species, especially related to weeds. So all of us deal with that at this time of year, and we certainly appreciate that's an important topic, especially as that grass starts to get green and we start jumping into spring. So I know it's almost time. There's kids going to cattle shows. There's folks mowing the yard. Everybody is getting close to that time of year. What are you guys doing to get ready for spring?
Well, that's a good question, I guess.
It's a good question, or you guess you're getting ready for spring.
I guess I'm getting ready for spring. It's all those things, you know, it's trying to decide if what jacket to wear, because it's still pretty chilly in the mornings, and then how to handle that tremendous temperature swing, as well as I'm just kind of ready for green grass and the buzzards to come back and for it to be spring.
Yeah. It's getting to that time of year, and we'll be there before long. And I think everybody's getting ready to. I know some folks have already started turning cattle out onto pastures and parts of the country and have had them out on grass for a little bit. And others are anxiously awaiting the day they can do that. And we're going to talk through some of those issues today. I just want to remind you, as always, we sure appreciate if you provide us feedback. If you want to send us a question, you can always send us a question or a comment at bci@ksu.edu. That's also a good way to sign up for. We send out a weekly e-blast that has some of our topics from the podcast, but also some of the other topics that will be relevant for your operation. So you can sign up there as well if you want to get that weekly e-blast. But I want to start talking, and Sarah, we're happy to have you join us today. We've worked a lot with your husband, and Philip does a lot of the nutrition stuff, and you're an agronomist. Tell us a little bit about you, and then I want to ask you some questions about your podcast.
Sure, Brad. So my position here at K-State is as an extension weed management specialist. So I spend a lot of time talking to row crop producers across the state of Kansas, so dealing with commodity crops like corn, soybeans, sorghum, wheat, things of that nature. And we spend a lot of time talking about herbicide resistance. That's kind of the big thing in row crop production. So talk a lot about herbicide resistant Palmer amaranth these days.
Yep. And you've been in this position since last year, or actually 2019.
Yeah. Right? So we just turned over our 1 year anniversary at the end of the year. So I started my spot here. My official start date was like November 3rd, I think, of 2019. So
excellent. Well, we're glad to have you here at K-State, because I know there's a lot of those questions. And many times when we talk about weeds, and we've got a lot of folks that I know do crops and pastures, and there's a lot of focus on what am I going to do with the crops and how am I going to manage those. But it's also a concern on the pasture side. And this is one of the reasons that you've started. And I like the name for your podcast, The War Against Weeds. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So this podcast was just sort of a brainstorm with a couple of friends and colleagues of mine that we need to do some things different in extension to reach a larger audience and kind of get to some folks who maybe aren't the ones that are coming to the traditional extension programs. And, you know, kind of the word that we shouldn't mention, COVID, I think helped us kind of jumpstart that a little bit as far as seeing a need to have some good programming. And, you know, there's a lot of things as an extension specialist that we need to talk about with our clients, but we don't really have time in that traditional 30 to 45 minute, you know, show up and give your talk at a county meeting kind of thing. And, you know, maybe it doesn't translate well to a newsletter article or something of that nature. So, you know, we really wanted to give folks tools to think about the whys of the management practices that the management recommendations that we're putting out there in terms of really herbicide resistant weed management. So, you know, we talk a lot about we use this kind of battle analogies a lot, right? We're you used them earlier this morning, Brad, battling weeds, and you know, it's a fight to try to stay ahead of them. So we kind of ran with that, the war against weeds.
Well, I like that, because that's what it feels like.
It feels like that, yeah.
Right? When you get out there, especially if you're doing hand-to-hand combat along the fence row or trying to figure out where you're going to get them out of the pasture. But I think it is also ever-changing. And that's one of the issues that as we work through the process and we think about, and I want to talk some about weed management in pasture specifically. So as we look at those grazing environments and you see pastures that are don't have a lot of weeds, you see pastures that have some weeds, but as you're dealing with that from a producer standpoint, I'll take it back to the broad level. What are some of the things you want to think about when you're managing weeds in your pasture?
So I think with any management decision, I think the first thing you have to think about is what is your goal, right? So if I have someone who calls with a question and they're trying to grow, you know, high quality hay for a specific market, I'm going to give them some different weed management advice than I'm going to be somebody who's just trying to carry over, you know, mama cows on their piece of pasture, right? So different levels of input are appropriate for those two different really levels of outcome or levels of revenue that you're going to get off of those management systems. So that's kind of the first thing I think to think about is what is your goal and what level of inputs are you willing to put into this pasture or this hay meadow or whatever the case may be. I think other things to think about, I kind of tongue in cheek a lot of times say that your cattle are really how you manage your cattle. That's your best weed management tool. As far as managing weeds in pastures, avoiding overgrazing is really critical because, you know, the name of the game here is to try to keep your forage, your desired species, as healthy and as competitive as you can, right? So you don't want it run down because then that's when you open up those opportunities for those weeds to come in. You know, weeds are super fascinating. They're opportunistic little critters that, you know, will take advantage of those weak spots in your pasture to come in and get established.
So. Yeah, and I think you bring up overgrazing, and I think that's certainly something that we talk about. And Philip, I know you've done some things looking at that. And as you look from a nutritionist perspective, I would say that's one of our more common issues is overgrazing. You rarely see undergrazing on a pasture where we left too much behind. Do you agree with that?
Oh yeah, most definitely. But yeah, we tend to take off more than we should because we're trying to get as much productivity out of that pasture as we can as far as cow weight, cow numbers and calf weight and things like that. And then, but from like what Sarah said, we may be shooting ourselves in the foot a little bit that we got to turn around and spend however much money per acre to control the weeds because we tried to pull too much pounds of calf off of that pasture.
Well, and it depends on your strategy. And I know, Bob, you've done some stuff with intensive management grazing or rotational grazing. And certainly there are people that employ that do use pretty different methods, right? And how intense it is.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the good thing about our jobs is we get to deal with people that are really innovative. And so you talk to people that consider themselves grass managers more than cattlemen. They're an interesting group because I like grass, but I really like cows. But you run into people that are kind of the other way around. They like cows, but they really like grass. And I learned so much from them because they're out there really, really looking at the grass and really looking at the species diversity in the pastures and what they want to accomplish. And like I said, that's one of the good things about our job is you get to kind of be challenged by people that look at things a little bit differently. So if you get a chance to be around somebody that's kind of a grass first type of a person, as someone who, like I say, I like cows and grass is there to serve my cows. And that's good, but it's actually ideal as if you can have some other inputs that are also influencing how you manage your operation.
Yeah, and I think it's it's part of that. What's your goal and what's your plan that Sarah talked about first, because you have to know when to get those cattle off, and then you have to have a place to go, right, with them. It's not just a matter of, yeah, I know I need to take them off this pasture today, but if I don't have another place to go with, how do I manage that? But I like the concept that you're saying of one of my best weed management techniques is leaving the residual, because dirt doesn't like a void, right? If we make a void and it is wide open, something's going to fill that. For example, you could look at our driveway, right? So when the gravel goes away, it takes those weeds no time to grow, and who knows what they're growing in. It doesn't take much. So
doesn't take much. And you remind me of something. I have a colleague who one of his favorite lines is that dark is the cheapest herbicide. Because those weed seeds need light to germinate. And so anytime, so that's what, you know, that's what your gravel's doing. That's what a good, dense, healthy forage stand is doing.
That's exactly right. So if you keep the weeds in the dark, then they're not gonna grow and come up. And I think it also goes back to, and you mentioned there's weed seeds out there, but are there soil conditions that make it worse for weeds, or is it pretty similar?
Soil conditions definitely matter. You know, anytime that you're not, so if you think about, you know, what you're doing is grazing. Phil was talking about extracting those pounds of calf from your pasture, right? Well, what's going with that pound of calf? That muscle is a lot of nitrogen, right? Protein, nitrogen, and inputs that have to be returned back to the soil or maintained in the soil. So, you know, if you get behind, especially on pH management, I think sometimes soil pH is sort of a forgotten management practice. It changes relatively slowly over time. And so it's easy to kind of miss that, that it's gotten too low, or in a few cases in certain parts of Kansas, you know, pH can be a little high. But, you know, really what we're thinking about is managing.
So you're saying we should do a soil test in the pasture. Is that an annual? Is that every 5 years? Is that how often should I do that?
Yeah, good question. So soil testing, something like every 3 to 5 years is probably a good thing to shoot for. And, you know, as far as like how to soil sample, just making sure you're getting a representative soil sample. It doesn't take a ton of soil cores. So, you know, maybe from 12-ish to 15-ish, maybe locations for really most pasture sizes, as long as, again, you've got kind of a representative land area. You know, if you have big differences in topography within your pasture, you might want to kind of create some sections there. But yeah, you're looking at, you know, pulling soil cores, and how deep you want to pull those cores, Brad, actually depends on which lab you're going to use. So some labs provide recommendations back to the land manager in terms of a 6-inch soil depth, and some do an 8-inch soil depth. So you really need to coordinate with the lab that you're going to send to know some of the specifics about how deep to pull those cores, how they want them packaged and sampled. So we talked about planning. It does take a little bit of planning. And the other thing is, you know, thinking about when you're going to pull those, because you've got to give yourself enough lead time to get them to the lab, get them processed, and get your results back in time to have a timely fertilizer application.
So. Yep, absolutely. So I think that incorporates in part of your planning. The other thing that we mentioned and we talked about, we've talked so far about weeds. Are all weeds the same, or should I maybe have some different strategy? And I know they're not, but how different is my strategy in controlling some of those weeds?
So there's a couple things to think about from my perspective in terms of, you know, what are you looking at for your weeds? Some weeds actually have relatively high nutritive value. There was some work done by the weed scientists at Mizzou that looked at palatability and nutritional quality of weeds, like common ragweed, for example, have actually pretty decent nutritional value. So again, if you're grazing cattle, probably a little bit of common ragweed isn't going to hurt. So common ragweed is an example of a warm season annual plant. So you got to know when that plant is going to grow. So is it warm season or cool season? So if we're talking, you know, brome grass, a lot of times our cool season species end up getting, well, you got to know when the plants are going to grow. So if you have an infestation of a cool season weed, you're going to want to control that earlier versus a warm season weed that's going to come on. So season of growth and then annual. So does that plant restart from seed every year? Or is it a perennial? Is that plant going to regrow from rhizomes or from some sort of root or overwintering structure every year? Because you got to think about those two situations differently, right? So your annuals, you can get rid of a little faster generally. Speaking, it takes time to deplete that soil seed bank, but those plants that you see, they're pretty easy to get rid of. Perennials are a totally different story. You got to kill the root. So I don't know. Does Philip ever talk about our kids with you guys? I think moms talk about their kids more than dads. I don't know. So our six-year-old, I introduced our children to thistle eradication last spring.
Awesome.
So our six-year-old was running around the yard the other day telling me that he was killing the thistles and you got to kill the roots to get rid of the thistles, right? And when you talk about perennial plants, that's what you've got to do. You've got to kill those roots. And so that affects application timing there. So typically we think about a lot of times more fall types of herbicide applications for those perennials so that we can kill the roots. And there's a whole host of other factors we could talk about there, but probably beyond the scope of what we need to cover today.
But I think the one of the key takeaways there is know what you're battling, know your battlefield, know the soil types there, and then do what you can to change that battlefield environment, whether it's we'll talk to a little herbicides earlier, but you have to know how you're going to put those on, and then modify with that grazing management. That leads us to our cattle chat checklist for this week, which are the top four tips for managing weeds in pastures. Our BCI cattle chat checklist this week are best practices for pasture weed management on your operation.
Number four, understand grazing restrictions when using herbicides.
Number three, know what weeds you are battling.
Number two, manage soil fertility, including pH, nitrogen, and phosphorus.
And number one, follow proper grazing management strategies.
And that's our BCI Cattle Chat checklist for this week. We're back as we're thinking about weeds. So a lot of times we need to probably think about them now. I don't always think about them until they pop up and I'm like, oh man, now we got to manage them.
Until they're winning.
I know. But right now, it is that time of year. The grass is just starting to green up. Philip, I want to ask you first because, man, we're ready to turn cows out. And the grass is still relatively short, but there's enough out there for them to pick around on. There's enough for them to eat for a little bit. How patient do I have to be? Because that's not really in my skill set.
Not yet. Don't do it.
So,
yeah. And we want to. We see green grass and we think, all right, no more of this hay feeding, no more. Just let them go graze it themselves. But from and Sarah can jump in here too and correct me, but from a plant physiology perspective, that we're talking about a perennial grass plant that's growing back from the roots. And if it's using its winter stores to grow those first leaves, and if we let those cows go out there and graze off those first leaves, then it doesn't have any leaf area to create new food from photosynthesis. And so you're going to actually hurt your overall forage production through the whole grazing season by grazing it off too soon in the spring. And so we need to hold those cattle off or at least get them into your rotational grazing system immediately so that you're going to graze on this one for a very short amount of time, a day, maybe even less than a day, whatever, and then move them to the next one so that grass has a chance to get that leaf material growing and start photosynthesizing some new food so it can keep going.
Yeah, the one thing I would add to that, Bill, is that you know, you talked about the within season effects, but I think it's interesting to think about the over time effects, right? Like a lot in Kansas, a lot of our brome grass stands are 20, 30 or more probably years old. And so one of the questions that I've gotten multiple times here since I've, you know, in the year that I've been here, is about foxtail control, which is a warm season grass in these brome pastures. And so, you know, we've looked at some herbicide answers and we're doing some research on that perspective, but really a colleague of mine pulled up an old, I think like 1967, I think was the date on this publication out of West Virginia, talking about brome grass stands over time. They were looking at haying, not so much grazing, but if you hay that stuff too soon, over like 5 years, you dramatically reduce the productivity of that stand. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that we do that maybe we don't see the negative impact of this year. But if you look back 10 years from now and you've got a problem, it was probably building incrementally over time. And it takes a whole lot more to fix that problem than it does to have avoided it in the first place.
That's the challenge with both grazing and weed management is there's no immediate reaction, right? So even if you, and the closest you get is herbicides or some type of fire, which you can see relatively immediately, but a lot of the decisions, and I think what you guys are saying, and especially at this early spring turnout time, there's some grass, there's some there, the impacts of that, there's still going to be grass there. Right. It's just not going to be near as productive. And it is hard for me to see with my eye how many pounds of forage that was produced per acre throughout the grazing season. Now, I may see my calves are doing okay or this, that, but there's always reasons I can rationalize. Maybe the calves didn't do quite as good this year, or maybe we didn't have enough rain or whatever, but it's got to have that base. And I think, Philip, you're exactly right. So do you have a benchmark and I know it differs by grass type of how much forage you want out there before you're ready to turn cattle out?
So yeah, it definitely depends on grass type. So some of our introduced grasses, you know, we can graze them down to a stubble height of like 3 to 4 inches. So, you know, you probably want 6 or so inches of new grass out there before you let them start grazing on it. Our natives, we need to leave more stubble height. We need to leave like 6 inches of stubble height. So they need to be 8 to 10 inches tall before you start grazing on them hard. And so I know it's hard, but you're better off to hold off on turning the cows out in the long run.
Well, and I think your point is also good. And we'll see, there'll be selective grazing. And Sarah talked earlier about some of the different weeds that they will eat and some of the weeds that they won't eat. And depending on where they are in the pasture, trying to get a uniform graze across depends on your pasture size, configuration, where the water is, how the cattle are going to move around. So you have to look at how can I try to manage that? And you don't go until the entire pasture is at that height level that you're talking about, Philip, or there'll be parts of it that'll be down to the dirt. So mm-hmm. cattle will eat while they're out there. That's their job. And I think that brings up a good question because you talked about native versus introduced pastures. And I know, Bob, you had a question on that relative to kind of your experiences growing up.
Yeah. I mean, we've got a nutritionist and an agronomist here. And so I'm trying to think, what question do I have?
And two veterinarians that are there.
Yeah, I don't know. So, but Sarah was talking about her kids and teaching them about thistles, and that brought back memories, nightmares, whatever. As a kid growing up and where I grew up, we had a lot of brome orchard grass type pastures. And one of the child rearing strategies of my parents was to send Bob out as much time as possible battling weeds. Now I'm starting to, I need to talk to my mother and say, now, is this really grass management or is this sun management? In that,
why couldn't it be both?
Well, it could be, but
it's a win-win.
But I'm going to contrast that. So this was the lesson I got was, you know, if you see it and it's a weed, if it's not grass, if it's not the grass species that we want, then kill it. Then when I was in practice, and partly I moved more into a native grass area where it was different. And the people I worked with were much more tolerant of a diversity of species. So now, was this, is this just differences of people? You know, my parents managed grass different than other parents. Is it a different in time, you know, that we moved from the 70s to modern times? Or is it a difference in, you know, kind of introduced type pastures versus native pastures? I mean, what is the proper way to look at weed control? Are weeds bad? Are they medium? Did my parents abuse me by making me spend? And a lot, sometimes it wasn't even chemicals. It was shovels, you know. So my mother listens to this this podcast. So we'll have to see what kind of input we can get here. So just confirm for me or help me understand the differences in different situations.
So, you know, I kind of let off with this, right, Bob? It depends on your goals. And we have very different goals a lot of time. Well, think about nature and nature's goals, right? Biology. We have an introduced pasture, something like a brome grass or something, that we want a monoculture in there. We established that single species planting, and that's what we want to keep, right? Especially, you know, think about some of the weeds we do want to get rid of, the thistles we've talked about, right? Like those can cause physical injury to cows. Some weeds are poisonous. You know, Perilla mint is one that gets a lot of press in that regard. So those guys, yeah, by all means. I mean, I grew up having to pull shattercane out of the soybean fields. I feel ya. I experienced that training too. But native grasses are different, right? Think about how the prairie developed. Nature, so laws of physics, right? Kind of that most disorganized state is the most stable, however mm-hmm. the physicist would say that. And so that's what nature is looking for too, right? So if we think about native grass plantings and prairies and things of that nature, they want that diversity. There probably is some time difference in that as far as we understand. We have, I would suspect, a much deeper understanding and interest in managing native pastures than we did however many years ago. That's become more
a of long a, time.
Yeah. It's, I'm not going to ask. I was trying to. you know, it's more in the public opinion, right? How we maintain and conserve those native types of plantings. And so, you know, if the cows will eat it and it's not going to hurt them, or if it's not invasive, which is related to the cows eating it, you know, maybe, especially in a native situation, you know, maybe herbicides aren't always necessary. It's an input cost, right? And cattlemen at the end of the day have to make money to stay in business. And so, you know, there's a cost benefit analysis that has to go into that decision to pull the trigger and spray, but it depends on where you are. Cause yeah, you know, with those native pastures, you know, Phil talked about, they don't tolerate grazing as well. They don't respond to fertilizers as well. So they're built to have that stability in terms of their diversity. So.
Yeah. And you kind of have to calibrate your eye to what you're looking at, because those pastures will look very, very different. So you have a native, highly diverse pasture, or even, and Bob, you talked about some pastures with monocultures, but you'll see a fair number of folks that will be interseeding legumes in with the grasses, and those pastures just look a little bit different, and the cattle handle them differently, right? Philip talks about how much residue to leave behind. And that does make a difference, because they're going to be selectively grazing as they go through. If I've got a lot of clover or something in there, that's not going to last very long as they go into the pasture. So I think it's really important and great points on figuring out a plan. And then the other thing that I heard, kind of listening between the lines, monitor that plan, and whether it's how much residual you leave behind, whether it's what kind of weed you have there this year. And I think there are some great resources, and Sarah made some good examples of, if I don't know what a particular weed is, I may want to check on it and figure out, is this going to be a problem? Is it perennial or is it an annual? what kind of issue am I dealing with? So we have certainly enjoyed having Sarah with us today. And don't forget, she's got a podcast called The War Against Weeds, and obviously goes into a lot more details on how to manage some of these weeds, what are some of the things that they commonly deal with, and based a lot on questions from folks like you. And we certainly enjoy when you send us questions as well. So if you ever have questions for us, please send them to us at bci@ksu.edu.